evil face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, or no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish it didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, September 22, 2010. One Palestinian killed in Jerusalem, as Abbas announces that end of settlement freeze does not necessarily mean end of talks. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. An Israeli security guard opened fire and killed Samer Sarhan, 32, from the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Silwan, Wednesday at dawn. Israeli police claims the guard, who is employed by a security company hired to work in an Israeli settlement in the occupied East Jerusalem, was stuck in his car that was blocked and stoned by Palestinians. This, however, contradicts the claims of residents of the neighborhood, who stated that Sarhan and another youth were on their way to work and were confronted by the guard. Sarhan left behind a wife and five children. The oldest is 11 and the youngest is 3 years old. Following the funeral of Sarhan, Palestinians demonstrated and some youth hurled stones at Israeli soldiers. The Israeli online newspaper Haaretz said that some Palestinians hurled stones at Israeli worshippers in the Western Wall inside the Old City of Jerusalem. Haaretz also added that a 35-year-old Israeli man was wounded when one of the Palestinian demonstrators stabbed him with a knife. The man, whose name was not released, was hospitalized and his wounds were described as moderate. In other news, the Israeli military kidnapped two Palestinian civilians from the southern West Bank city of Bethlehem and the nearby village of Hosan Wednesday morning. Palestinian media sources said that Israeli troops invaded the village of Hosan and surrounded the house of Mohammed Hamamra, 21, and searched it. Troops blindfolded Hamamra and took him to an unknown destination. Also in Bethlehem, Israeli military broke into the house of Hossam Shoka in Wadi Shaheen neighborhood in the city. Eyewitnesses said that Israeli soldiers handcuffed Shoka and took him to an unknown location. In political news, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas signaled on Wednesday that renewed settlement construction would not end talks. Abbas' comments came during a dinner with Jewish leaders in New York. Abbas was quoted as saying, quote, "I cannot say I will leave the negotiations, but it will be very difficult to continue if Netanyahu will announce that he will start building." End quote. The statement is seen as a serious change in his attitude, declared repeatedly that Palestinians will leave the talks if settlement construction continues. By this, we come to the end of our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Palestine. You have been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and George Rishmawi.
Across the U.S., funds are now being raised for a group calling itself U.S. Boat to Gaza, which is seeking $370,000 over the next month to finance a ship that will bring material aid, including construction supplies, to Palestinians living in the besieged Gaza Strip. Although Israel has eased its blockade of Gaza in recent months, there are still severe limits on construction and raw materials allowed into the territory governed by the militant Hamas party. The U.S. vessel is set to join a flotilla of other ships from Europe, Canada, India, South Africa, and parts of the Middle East, which is due to set sail for Gaza this fall. U.S. organizers say their Gaza-bound ship will be named after President Obama's best-selling book, The Audacity of Hope. This flotilla will sail the same route as the group of ships boarded and seized by Israeli commandos at the end of May, during which 8 Turkish solidarity activists and 1 Turkish-American youth were killed. In mid-September, Southern New England activists sponsored a cruise on the Connecticut River to raise money for the U.S. boat to Gaza. Participants on board the Sunset Cruise enjoyed a Middle Eastern buffet, Palestinian music, and heard from 3 speakers. One was Nada Qatar, a Palestinian-American who is the executive director of the Westpac Foundation, a peace and justice action and educational network based in New York. Qatar previously served as a consultant for the United Nations Development Program in the Gaza Strip. In her comments, she addressed the suffering of the people in Gaza and urged Americans to support the U.S. boat to Gaza.
Even in 1998, before the Second Intifada, before the election of Hamas into government, conditions were bad. I remember being invited to the Jabalia refugee camp, and I was invited by the family to have some tea. The tea in the Middle East is heavily sweetened. They like their sugar in their tea. And even with the sweetened tea, I could taste the salt in the tea. So the people are drinking salt water in Gaza, and the children's kidneys are damaged, the elderly are damaged. I was staying in an apartment in the nicest part of the Gaza Strip in Gaza City. I was paying $500 US a month to stay there. I had a view of the Mediterranean. I was on the 5th floor. The apartment was gorgeous. It was 3 bedrooms. I didn't need all that space. But when I would take my daily shower in the nicest residential area of Gaza, there was just a trickle of water coming out. And by the end of the 5-week stay there, my hair was coming out in clumps, and my face had all broken out. Even the local vendors and grocers were telling me, even back in 98, this is going back 12 years, were telling me certain items were not available. I could notice the people are not healthy. They're not eating the traditional Palestinian foods, which a lot of it is plant-based. And so when Israel and the U.S. and Egypt and the international community punish the people living in Gaza, they're mainly punishing children under the age of 16, because the majority of the 1.5 million people who live there are children. So you see stunted children. You see very high rates of anemia. It's a very disturbing experience. Also, the poverty. Poverty imposed not just by capitalism, but compounded by a brutal occupation and siege. Sights that you wouldn't see in Palestine before. Children who are left to their own means in the streets. Poverty making people behave in ways that they would not ordinarily. Saudi money trying to come in and influence internal Palestinian politics. Men who are deprived of their livelihoods and some of whom cannot navigate the brutality of the occupation, so they take it out in the domestic zone, higher rates of domestic violence, all these issues compounded. So it was a very, very difficult experience for me. And that was back in 98, again, before the Second Intifada, before the election of Hamas. After the election of Hamas, really the Gaza Strip was hermetically sealed. Even in 98, I remember crossing the Eretz crossing, and what the Israelis have done is they've built a passageway with barbed wires. It was sort of what you see, you imagine for cattle to walk through to get to their pasture. It was, looked like it was built for cattle, for cows. And that's where all these thousands of men had to wait every morning to see if they could get into Israel, to get a job, to feed their families. So that was the memories I have. And now, as we all know, the situation is even worse. So that's why it's the responsibility of international civil society, since our governments are not doing the right thing. The onus is on ordinary people like you and me to do the right thing. I did speak with Lori Arbeiter this morning, who is one of the main organizers of the U.S. Boat to Gaza. She said that they are working closely with the Free Gaza movement, who have been the ones organizing these boats to Gaza in the past. And right now the push is for fundraising.
That was Nada Cotter, executive director of Westpac, speaking on behalf of the U.S. Boat to Gaza project, which hopes to send a ship with material aid to Palestinians living in the besieged Gaza Strip. Visit the group's website at ustogaza.org. This segment was recorded and produced by Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus.
Afghanistan, Tuesday. 9 U.S. soldiers were killed when their helicopter crashed in the Chopan district of Zabul province. One of the dead was a U.S. Navy SEAL from Prince George's County, right here on our own area. NATO claims there were no reports of ground fire, but they say that every time a U.S. helicopter goes down. The Taliban is known to possess Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, similar to or restored from the missiles given to anti-Soviet fighters by the CIA. This raised U.S. troop deaths in the Afghan War to 526 this year, the deadliest year of the war for U.S. soldiers with 3 months left to go. Afghanistan, Wednesday. The Danish Defense Ministry reported the death of a Danish soldier from an IED attack south of patrol base Spruzdar, about 6 kilometers northeast of Gorisk, Helmand province. Herat City, Afghanistan, Tuesday. Taliban insurgents rained rockets on Herat City, the provincial capital of the Western Herat province. Quote, "The rockets were aimed at the Italian Provincial Reconstruction Team's office. The rockets hit residential areas, only smashing windows," said the province's deputy commander of police, Dilawar Shah Dilawar. Baghdad, Iraq, Tuesday. A roadside bomb hit a U.S. convoy in southern Baghdad. Wait a minute! What U.S. convoy? Didn't U.S. combat troops withdraw from Iraq? Oh yeah. These aren't supposed to be combat troops. Nasiriya, Iraq, Tuesday. 7 people were wounded and a U.S. vehicle and 3 civilian cars were damaged when a bomb exploded in central Nasiriya on Tuesday, according to a security source. Quote, "Anti-Shields bomb went off Tuesday, targeting a U.S. convoy in central Nasiriya, injuring 7 persons, including 3 women and a child," the source told Aswat al-Iraq News Agency. Sounds to me like U.S. convoys are still being hit with explosively formed penetrators, just like in 2007. Mr. Barack Obama, does this sound to you like the surge worked in Iraq? Does this sound to you like a viable model for Afghanistan? If not, now's the time to cut your losses, bring all the troops home from both wars today, not after 4,000 U.S. troops die in Afghanistan on your watch.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
The investigative website ProPublica reports that the use of aggressive interrogation techniques and outright torture are damaging criminal cases against Guantanamo detainees. Federal judges have ruled against the U.S. Justice Department in 8 cases to date, where witnesses presented evidence that detainees were forcibly interrogated. In addition, there are 52 cases of Gitmo inmates saying they are wrongfully detained. As a result, judges have tossed out government evidence, including confessions, because of harsh interrogation tactics, ranging from verbal threats to physical abuse. These rulings may explain why the Justice Department has been reluctant to press criminal charges against Gitmo detainees. Only 24 of the 780 detainees held at Guantanamo since 2002 have been charged with a crime before a military commission. 4 detainees were convicted, and a single inmate was transferred to a civilian court for trial in New York City. The Obama administration declared 48 of the remaining 176 Gitmo detainees will be held indefinitely, since they are too dangerous to release and cannot effectively be prosecuted in civilian or military courts. Most of the Gitmo detainees faced multiple aggressive interrogations that started before they were transferred to Guantanamo Bay Detention Center. At the time, military interrogators were under intense political pressure to produce actionable intelligence rather than strong court cases.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit SOAW.org or call 202-234-3440.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQT Radio@hushmail.com. WSQT Radio@hushmail.com.
The corporate-funded Tea Party movement, which came into prominence for their virulent hatred of President Obama, deficit spending, and government programs, appears to have virtually taken over the Republican Party. Over recent months, the movement-sponsored candidates have won several important primary victories, the latest being Christine O'Donnell's defeat of Delaware's GOP-endorsed candidate to run for U.S. Senate. But O'Donnell, who has declared that masturbation is adultery and women shouldn't serve in the military, now stands accused of campaign ethics violations and is far behind in recent polls against her Democratic opponent. Other successful Tea Party-endorsed Senate candidates, such as Sharon Angle of Nevada, Joe Miller in Alaska, and Rand Paul of Kentucky, have taken controversial stands against many government programs, such as Social Security, Medicare, unemployment insurance, and civil rights legislation, while favoring tax breaks for the nation's wealthiest citizens. Many polls suggest that widespread anger at continuing high unemployment could cost Democrats control of the House and/or Senate in this November's midterm congressional election. But it's not clear how much voters really know about the Tea Party and Republican agenda to eviscerate the nation's social safety net. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine, who gauges the popularity of the Tea Party and examines why voters would embrace candidates promising to end cherished New Deal programs during the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression.
On the one hand, the ideology that they're espousing is just a kind of a libertarian free market ideology, which is what got us into this mess in the first place. The deregulation of Wall Street also got us into the mess in the Gulf of Mexico with BP. And the other very weird thing is we're in the deepest recession since the Great Depression. And the people who are suffering the most, young people, poor people, we have almost record levels of poverty now, minorities, there's a record number of home foreclosures. We are not seeing the people in the streets who just lost their jobs, just had their farm or their home taken by the bank, or the kids who can't find jobs. We're not seeing that. Instead, we're seeing this crowd of white people who are from the petty bourgeoisie, who are small shop owners, or I interviewed some of the Tea Party people in Madison on April 15th. There were realtors, there were carpenters, there were printers, there were construction people. There weren't people who had just been laid off. And this is troubling because this is the constituency of fascism, after all. And Noam Chomsky himself has been issuing warnings, as has Chris Hedges, about the risk of fascism in the United States. And this is a mass-based far-right movement that we haven't seen in this country for decades. And I think we mock it at our peril.
Matthew, I wanted to ask you a bit about why you think we have candidates who espouse this Tea Party line that we should get rid of Social Security and Medicare, that we should oppose planks of the 1964 civil rights legislation that banned racial discrimination by businesses, that we should stop unemployment insurance to those people who are unemployed, that we should revoke the 14th Amendment that says that people born here in this country are citizens, and who favor tax breaks for millionaires. It seems that either people out in this country are not very well acquainted with these positions, or they are very consciously voting against their own economic self-interest.
Well, they're drunk with this right-wing ideology. And the ideology has been paid for by the huge corporations and these billionaires like the Koch brothers, the oil guys down in Texas, who have been trying to gin up a grassroots movement for years and years and finally succeeded. And the issue that they talk about are almost incidental. I mean, it was irrational that this group of people not only opposed any regulation on free enterprise, but that they opposed health care reform was very irrational. I mean, do you want want your kid or yourself to be stripped of health insurance just because the insurance companies can say you had a pre-existing condition? I mean, I don't think there are a lot of Americans who wanted that to happen, and yet the health care issue was the issue that they seized on, initially at least. And so I think what this was a group of far-right Republicans who were able to become politicized, some who had never been overtly politicized in getting out in the street political, and got politicized by the fact that we had a black man in the White House. And, you know, all of a sudden the issues that didn't concern them during the Bush years, like civil liberties, like the Constitution, like the debt, all of a sudden concerned them. And so that's irrational, that kind of response, and very sudden. And so I look for explanations in the fact of Obama's race and in the fact that, you know, Obama is pushing an agenda that they don't like for either long-held political reasons or newfound political reasons that are fed to them by their paymasters.
It seems that the Tea Party movement and the corporations that are funding it seem to have the goal of eviscerating America's modest social safety net. How do progressives, how do people who support the government when it comes to assisting those who are vulnerable and elderly and sick, how do progressives in general combat this? The message from the Tea Party, unfortunately, just seems to go unanswered in so much of our media.
Well, it's not answered coherently either by the Democrats or by the Obama administration. I mean, you're right. The Tea Partiers, you know, they're not just puppets of these billionaires either. There is a genuine grassroots movement that has caught fire here. But they want to essentially repeal the New Deal. And some of it is out of ignorance and some of it is out of just pure ideology. They don't want any government role. They'd rather fend for themselves, even though they're going to get screwed by corporate power. What we need to do is say that the Obama administration has acted inadequately. In fact, the Tea Partiers are correct when they say, look, the bank bailout was ridiculous. It was ridiculous because Obama should have squeezed the banks when he had them on their hands and knees and said, we'll give you the $700 billion with a few strings attached. The strings are you can't foreclose on anybody for 2 years. The strings are you got to reduce everybody's mortgage by 30% because the market was hyperinflated. Every person in America who had a mortgage at that point would have benefited. One of the problems Obama's facing is he hasn't given people tangible reasons to vote for him or Democrats at this point. I mean, he's talking like he's delivered this great change, but people haven't felt the great change because he hasn't wrestled with corporate power aggressively enough. I think the fight has got to be against corporate power. There are some Tea Partiers who agree with the proposition that we should amend the Constitution to overturn the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United that said corporations are persons and corporations should be able to buy elections, essentially. You know, I think there's some room there to talk to people at the grassroots on some of these issues, with some of them anyway, but some of them are unreachable by reason. And, you know, I worry sometimes that we've entered the dusk of the age of reason because you have the creationists, you have the people who deny global warming, you have the people against stem cells, and you have the people on the Tea Party movement who, some of them anyway, seems so far away from any rational argument.
That was Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine and host of their weekly radio program. Visit the magazine's website at progressive.org.
On the 15th of September, protesters showed up at the Liaison Capitol Hill Hotel, protesting 102 years of congressional bribery and corruption by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, whose annual legislative conference was scheduled then and there. Several protesters entered the hotel. Got one person inside. Now two inside. Where are they? There they go. Whoa!
That's right! The National Cattlemen's Beef Association!
Don't touch my camera! That's fine, but no assaults!
Claiming that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has moved out of the liaison to another hotel somewhere on Independence Avenue, taking over 100 taxi cabs
at 11:30 last night.
We do not know if this report is true or not. It did claim that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association met in this hotel, the liaison at 415 New Jersey Avenue, yesterday.
Cattlemen's Beef Association, you're polluting the land.
Literally.
Polluting the air, polluting the water. Polluting the air, polluting the water.
After a while, the cops showed up. National Cattlemen's Beef Association really slink away in the middle of the night, loading up 100 taxi cabs at 11:30 p.m. Tuesday night, moving off to another hotel on Independence Avenue, or were hotel staff lying to protesters, trying to keep these corporate corruption specialists from receiving a noisy bullhorn and air horn protest at 1 in the afternoon the following day?
Shot and killed a dog in cold blood. Wasn't enough. He had a knee in the dog's ribs, try and choke him out. Threw him down the stairs and shot him. A little over a week later, animal rights protesters and dog lovers showed up for the MPD's headquarters at 300 Indiana Avenue Northwest.
We are here today because on September 12th at the Adams Morgan Day Festival, an officer named Scott Pike murdered a dog named Parrot. In front of thousands of bystanders, including children. Earlier on the scene, Parrot and another dog were in an altercation. Parrot's caretaker had settled Parrot down and had him under control. When Officer Pike asked him to release the dog to him, he then proceeded to get on top of Parrot, putting his knee into his neck, then picked him up by his neck, threw him down a flight of stairs, and proceeded to shoot him in front of all these bystanders down a stone landing. We're asking today for Officer Pike to be terminated immediately and for stricter rules and guidelines to be imposed on the MPD police officers, as well as better training for these officers. Because this is not an isolated incident. There are thousands of these incidents every year where innocent dogs are killed by police officers.
That's right.
Is this Parrot an hour before he was killed?
Yeah. Being actually petted by Fenty.
And I notice he's on a leash.
On a leash. Happy as can be. And
now, thanks to Officer Fike, he's rotting in the ground. Hi, Metropolitan Pitbull Death Squad. Signs. Parrot, a good dog murdered by MPD. Pictures of the dog that Officer Scott Fike threw down the stairs and shot in cold blood. Indeed, it's widely suspected that Parrot was shot and killed for being a pit bull. Killed for what kind of dog he is. Now, this wouldn't be much of a surprise from a police department that uses the exact same profiling against people, where if you're black or brown, you're much more likely to be shot and murdered by the Metropolitan Police Department, like what happened to Deontay Rawlings, than if you're a white kid from Georgetown.
Who do you serve?
Who do you protect?
Who do you serve?
Who do you protect?
Who do you serve?
Siege of Fortress continues. On the 18th of September, animal rights protesters return to the home of Michael Pays, head of government relations for Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs still hasn't divested of the last third of their stock in Fortress, the investment firm that made $100 million in loans to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences.
Good afternoon, Michael Pace! What's that? We are here in front of Michael Pace's house because, and he is the director of
It looks like they're home. One of them was seen peeking out through the window. Windows open upstairs.
Oh boy. Michael Payne needs to cut inside with HLS.
Sound is carrying deep, penetrating like an artillery round of resistance. Didn't take very long for Michael Page's neighbors to start complaining. More and more neighbors building up the opposite side of the street, talking to the cops. This is really starting up a hornet's nest this time. What the hell's going on back here?
You need my permission.
Actually, you have no way of enforcing that.
You're in public space.
The cops photograph us, they don't ask our permission, it's no different. Kimberly Wharton, Executive of Government Affairs for AstraZeneca, also received a visit at her apartment in 300 Massachusetts Avenue. $500 worth of campaign cash with her name on it revealed her address.
Kimberly Wharton, for the patent, for the mouse, for the mouse!
actually showed up outside 300 Massachusetts Avenue, but they didn't do anything. Probably just told security they don't have the power to order protesters off the sidewalk out front. On the 21st of September, the siege of Fortress began heating up with police harassment of animal rights protesters outside Fortress investor Goldman Sachs, which is still holding on to a third of their original investment in Fortress, the lifeline that bailed out puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences. Undercover investigators caught so-called scientists at Huntington Life Sciences punching beagle puppies in the face. Protests at Goldman Sachs. This time, Capitol Police showed up and went so far as to try to search a bag, but had to back off when no consent was given. Silly cop, animal rights protesters don't carry ID. The police response and the failed attempt to search a bag at Goldman Sachs did not deter protesters from moving on to Nomura, the other major stockholder in Fortress Investments in the D.C. area. Although protesters did not make it into Nomura's offices this time, the message certainly made it in.
This is a global week of action against the financial investors in Huntington Life Sciences. Activists across the globe are staging action to make the public aware of the way that Fortress and Fortress shareholders support animal cruelty and kill the hundreds of animals each and every day of the week to bring us products we don't need, like bleach, Splenda, and Viagra. Nomura, your investments in Fortress and therefore your support for Huntington Life Sciences kill 500 animals every day, because Huntington Life Sciences punches beagle puppies in the face, dissects live primates, and mutilates rabbits for the highest bidder. You're very well aware of this, Nomura, and you know what you must do. You must sell all of your ownership in Fortress Investments. 1, 2, 3, 4,
open up the tea store!
5, 6, 7, 8,
that's the Watson River!
9, 10, 11, 12,
go to hell!
1, 2, 3. Well, DNA, it's natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life, each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows, they grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
Two Greenpeace activists, Junichi Sato and Toru Suzuki, who are campaigning to expose corruption in Japan's government-subsidized whaling industry, were recently convicted of theft and trespassing stemming from a 2008 incident. The activists, acting on an insider tip that ship crews were illegally selling whale meat that belonged to the government, delivered a package containing the meat, demanding an investigation by the Tokyo prosecutor's office. Soon afterwards, the two were arrested on criminal charges. Although prosecutors sought an 18-month prison sentence for them, a Japanese court imposed a one-year suspended sentence for the two, who are appealing the decision. In a moral victory for Greenpeace, the court found evidence of dubious practices in the whaling industry, and that the activists did not seek to profit from their actions. According to the Christian Science Monitor, this is Japan's second criminal prosecution of anti-whaling activists in recent months. In July, Sea Shepherd activist Peter Bethune of New Zealand was given a two-year suspended sentence for illegally boarding a Japanese whaling ship. Defendant Junichi Sato says the court failed to recognize the right of citizens to expose corruption in the Japanese whaling industry, a right built into the International Covenant of Political and Civil Rights, the foundation of international human rights law.
Of course, it's Sea Shepherd, not Greenpeace, that limited last year's whale poaching to less than half of their self-imposed quota of nearly 1,000 whales. Greenpeace hasn't sunk any whaling ships. Sea Shepherd has sunk 12 whaling ships. A couple years ago, somebody in Japan's criminal whale murdering industry said not to worry about Greenpeace, but don't ever forget Sea Shepherd because Sea Shepherd is samurai. Still, nobody deserves to end up in Japan's dungeons for standing up to the Yakuza gangster-dominated whaling industry. It's the gangsters that kill the whales that ought to be in Japan's prisons. Is your SUV running low on gas? Is your wallet been running on fumes lately? Well, this is Behind Pollution, offering blowout prices on regular, plus, and premium at every BP Behind Pollution gas station, where you can get a gusher of savings filling up that Ford Excursion or that Hummer. And never mind our blown-out oil well at Macondo in the Gulf of Mexico. Never mind all those oiled pelicans. And never mind this burning hot summer of global warming. Never mind the voices that tell you to boycott BP for the horrific things Behind Pollution has done in the Gulf of Mexico. Just keep filling up that SUV. Just keep enjoying that gusher of savings the blowout prices at BP gas stations are bringing you. After all, you never liked seafood much anyway. The following segment was recorded shortly before BP's notorious blown-out oil well at Macondo was finally plugged with cement. Although BP's engineers have plugged the well, BP's bean counters have done little to alleviate the suffering along the Gulf Coast, and now the oil industry is staging a series of rallies trying to preempt stricter regulation of drilling safety.
Millions of people who live along the Gulf coastline have seen their jobs and businesses destroyed by the spill, which damaged the seafood industry and drove away tourists. The full extent of damage to the environment may not be known for years. In contrast to the lack of government enforcement of safety standards on offshore oil drilling, widely seen as one of the causes of the Gulf spill disaster, Congress has recently attempted to strengthen regulations on the oil and gas industry. But now the American Petroleum Institute, or API, is organizing rallies nationwide, opposing federal legislation that would increase safety standards on oil rigs, remove the monetary cap on liability for future spills, increase royalties paid to taxpayers, and protect oil industry whistleblowers. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Tyson Slocum, director of Public Citizens Energy Program, who comments on the imminent death of BP's disastrous Gulf oil well and explains how API is employing what he calls astroturf protests in hopes of turning around public opinion, which widely supports stricter regulation of the oil and gas industry.
On July 30th, the House of Representatives passed an excellent piece of legislation, actually, that would have comprehensively rewritten a lot of the rules that govern offshore oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, because one of the many things that the BP disaster exposed was a collusive relationship between regulators and the oil industry, to the point where we didn't really have regulators. What we had was an oil industry that was complying with its own voluntary set of standards. And as we learned, the oil industry was not up to the task of protecting the environment, protecting the workers. So the House of Representatives passed an excellent piece of legislation that rewrote those rules. Another issue was that under current law, an individual company is only liable for up to $75 million of damages in the event of an oil spill. Clearly, that is inadequate. And so the House bill included unlimited liability, which is the way it should be. That's what we all learn in kindergarten. You make a mess, you're responsible for cleaning it up. The oil industry is among one of the most profitable industries in the entire U.S. economy, and they can afford, and they have a responsibility as part of their business to pay for any messes, because anything they don't pay for, the American taxpayer will have to pay for. The problem here has been the Senate, where they have not been able to pass a corresponding measure to send to the president for a signature. And that's because the lobbying of the American Petroleum Institute, which is the lobbying arm of the oil industry, has been fierce. And they have been arguing that regulating oil companies is going to kill U.S. jobs. And that is a lie, and it is irresponsible. The fact is, whether we're talking about Wall Street, whether we're talking about oil companies, Americans are sick and tired of paying for out-of-control corporations' mistakes. Mistakes that stem from no regulation over their operations. We went way too far in the Bush era removing regulations over large, powerful corporations. We now need to return to an era where the public and workers and the environment are protected from these corporate abuses, and you do that by regulating these companies.
The American Petroleum Institute has organized a campaign, both with millions of dollars worth of advertising on television and what has been described as these AstroTurf rallies opposing congressional reforms on the oil and gas industry. Tell us a little bit about what the API, the American Petroleum Institute, is doing.
Well, what they're doing is getting their employees who work for the oil industry out in public at rallies, and calling that a grassroots effort. That is not a grassroots effort. When you have people who work for the oil industry, that is not what's known as a grassroots movement. Public Citizen and other community organizations, we deliver grassroots. So those are people that are unaffiliated with our organization, that are just concerned citizens coming out because they care about an issue. And the ironic thing here is that the big API rallies, the big American Petroleum Institute rallies, run September 1st. On September 2nd, you had an explosion at an offshore oil platform in the Gulf of Mexico run by Mariner Energy that underscored that the oil and gas industry has serious problems when it comes to safety. When you look at the pictures of the devastation outside of San Francisco from that natural gas pipeline explosion, when you look at the devastation in Michigan to the rivers and waterways from a 200,000-gallon leak of crude oil by the oil company Enbridge, the list goes on and on, and these are just things that have happened in the last couple of months. The fact is that when the American Petroleum Institute says that the oil industry has a great track record, that they don't need government oversight, it's a lie, and it is disingenuous, and it's dangerous. The fact is that we, the people, need to be protected from abuses by this industry, because this industry has not taken safety and environmental protection seriously. And as long as they continue to fail to do that, we need to have Congress step in and get the job done. The oil industry and their lobbyists are out there every single day meeting with all of the lawmakers. They are getting their voices heard, and it's important that all the listeners out there make sure that they are the ones getting heard and not just the oil industry lobbyists.
That was Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program. Contact Public Citizen at area code 202-588-1000 or visit their website at citizen.org.